Hey, it's KOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for tuning in for some big ideas now. More police. That's one of the items in Seattle Mayor Ed Murray's latest budget. But some activists want the opposite. They want the city to defund the police. Seattle attorney Nikita Oliver is an anti-racism activist. She says defunding the Seattle Police Department is just the first step to a culture that doesn't need police at all.
One, I think we need a cultural shift in how we think about peace and how we think about how people, about our own individual sovereignty as humans, but also how we all control our own behavior. As a teacher in a classroom, I can do everything I want to police the behavior of my students, but reality is they control themselves. I think society is constructed in a lot of the same ways, that we don't need a separate institution to keep the peace or enforce the laws. What we need is a cultural shift that actually acknowledges the human rights, dignity, and sovereignty of all people. And we'd see a lot of the crimes that we use to justify the police decrease, or the reasons that we say we need police to keep peace.
What's a crime that would go away?
I think drug crimes could go away, which would require some decriminalization. We have a lot of crimes that we have criminalized as a means of social control. So we say we don't like it when drug addicts use in public. So then what we do is we create laws against drug use. Instead of creating something like a safe injection site where folks who do choose to use drugs or maybe are dealing with addiction can go to that safe injection site.
And we are changing our drug laws in many places, including Washington. But what do you say to somebody who's the victim of a rape, a murder, a home invasion who says that's what the police are for?
Yeah, so looking at our statistics from 2016, there have been 124 rapes in 2016 in our county. And so of the 30,972 calls that have been made, 124 were rapes. That percentage is incredibly small. And so it's not to say that we won't need some sort of mechanism for addressing crimes of harm, but there are other mechanisms that we know of globally, worldwide, that can be used to address that, to be more restorative and to be less punitive.
What are those methods?
Restorative justice is community-based accountability. It's the idea that anytime an issue happens, the community as a whole is actually responsible for that issue happening. It's not just quote-unquote perpetrator, offender, and victim. It's everyone within the community played a role in that particular outcome. And so what restorative justice hopes to do is to look at everyone involved and ask ourselves, what can we do to restore ourselves back to a healthy, balanced, functioning community? And in the instance of rape, there are so many reasons why it occurs. And the goal of restorative justice is not simply to deal with that one instance, but it's to also ask ourselves what other factors were surrounding that rape that made it possible. How do we begin to alleviate and eliminate those factors so rape slowly becomes something we don't deal with anymore?
What about saying maybe restorative justice is the vision for the future, but today we still need police?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that I'm going to walk out of KUOW today and all of a sudden we're going to be able to fully dismantle the policing institution. I mean, it's been in play for a long time. I think what has to happen is we need the goal of the cultural shift that allows us to dismantle the policing institution. There are a lot of people in power who feel safe with the police. So even considering that there are marginalized or grassroots organizers or communities that don't consider police safe is so far outside of their paradigm that they can't imagine it. So how do you then get a whole group of people who see the policing institution as keeping them safe to acknowledge a group of people who have never felt safe with police? And I think that's part of the struggle we're in right now. And I see that happening in the city of Seattle, where we're having these conversations everywhere from City Hall to classrooms. I mean, even in schools, we're asking ourselves, is it appropriate to have school resource officers, or they're actually Seattle Police Department officers, in middle schools? I don't think it is. And a lot of students are afraid of police officers. So then to go from the street where you're afraid of police officers and then go to school where you're afraid of police officers, we create a context where young people can't learn. And so I do think what we're really thinking about is, you're correct, it's having that goal of dismantling, but also building, redistributing those funds and those resources to something that creates a safer environment for everyone. That's going to require people to begin to see the different ways in which different people are forced to engage law enforcement.
What about the goal of better police instead of fewer police, better trained police, more accountable police?
I hear that argument a lot. And I think it's the way that we go when we're comfortable with incremental reform. When we say over time, we can get a culturally better policing institution. I think reality is people are so comfortable with social control because they are not comfortable with other people. I would rather know that when I am uncomfortable with my neighbor, I can simply just call the cops and the cops will deal with it. And that has some incredibly traumatic outcomes for a lot of people. Think about Seattle as a city that's rapidly gentrifying. A story one of my youth told me is he went home to his house in the Central District. He got into his home with a key. He left, went to a store, and then came back again. And when he came back, the Seattle Police Department was at his house because his neighbor, who just moved into the home next door to him, called the cops on him because she didn't know who he was. Now, this is a young 16-year-old black male. He's been living in that house next to her house almost his entire life. And so her idea of who he was, she had an immediate fear that he didn't belong there. So what she did was call the police, which then ended up in a pretty negative encounter for this young man with the cops, because then he had to explain, actually, this is my home. And it almost amounted in an arrest for him. So when we consider the issue of social control alongside our discomfort with our neighbors and how much we just don't get to know people, I think it actually results in an environment that leads to the sort of murders that we've been seeing. On the flip side of it, I think police are also scared. They're also human beings, right? And I think the policing institution as a whole creates a segment of society where they can be scared, but also then be expected to keep social control. And I think that's a lot of responsibility for an individual human.
So the whole setup is one of, if you think of it, of inhumanity and mistrust.
Absolutely.
We've set ourselves up for that.
We have. We have set ourselves up to dehumanize other humans based on what we consider law enforcement.
When you talk about dismantling the police department with police, current or former, how do they react?
I've spoken with police officers before in different types of situations, sometimes at community meetings. I've been on panels with police officers where we've had this conversation. But also when I serve as a legal observer and in the streets at a protest, I from time to time, I will engage in conversation with officers. I mean, they're human beings, right? And the responses vary. I think it depends on how long they've been in the force, how much they've seen, why they became a police officer. I know someone who became a sheriff, and after being a sheriff for only a year, realized there were just so many egregious violations of people's rights that he was expected to not only participate in, but also keep silent, that he just left the sheriffs because he felt like there was no way he could change it from the inside.
Do you think people in Seattle are especially wedded to police because we're uncomfortable with one another? You talked about a discomfort with our neighbors.
Yeah.
That's not everybody in Seattle, but
yeah.
I've heard that. You've heard the Seattle freeze label.
And I'm from Indiana, so when I first moved here, it was definitely a different world for me. I think as gentrification has taken hold and we see people pushed out of their homes, not just in the Central District, but also in Ballard, I would venture to say people from Ballard have been pushed to the Central District, right? As people get pushed out and moved around, we naturally don't know who's around us. And as humans, as animals, when we don't know who's around us, there's a sense of fear. And I think to get over fear actually requires work. You have to be willing to go get to know the other person. And so I do think that contributes to why we leaned so heavily on the policing institution, as opposed to getting to know our neighbors and finding ways to deal with conflict.
So if not police, aren't you talking about basically neighborhood watch groups?
You know, that's a place where I think we have some really complicated conversations we have to have. Neighborhood watch groups in a lot of ways come historically from what we watched the Black Panthers do, which was you had communities of black and brown folks whose interactions with police were continuously problematic. So what we said was we're going to create our own group who will protect us, but also police the police. A lot of what the Black Panthers did was they would actually follow the police around when they saw them stop somebody. They would observe it. They would help people know their rights when interacting with police. And that was in a lot of ways, especially here in Seattle, some of the earliest versions of Neighborhood Watch. When we look at a case like what happened with Trayvon Martin and the vigilante George Zimmerman, we see Neighborhood Watch gone wrong. And I think we've also seen this in Seattle. I went to a Neighborhood Watch meeting with Chief O'Toole, And she was having a conversation with them. I believe it was in West Seattle, of some things that had happened. And the neighborhood watch group was incredibly afraid of the people that they said were coming into their neighborhood. But in a lot of ways, I think this is, again, the result of gentrification. These were actually people who had lived in that neighborhood for a long time, and people didn't know them. So neighborhood watch without a cultural shift is going to result in more incidents of murder, like with Trayvon Martin.
Finally, Nikita, you said yourself, we're not going to walk out of here and dismantle the Seattle Police Department immediately. So what is one thing that you'd like to see happen down that long road? What's next?
You know, I know that the mayor has been proposing 200 more police officers. And a lot of that line for argument has been saying that we have one of the smaller police forces in the United States. I would love to see that the money for those 200 officers actually go towards programs that aim to alleviate poverty, not just simply in the way that the city has decided needs to happen, but in a way that's led by the grassroots and those folks who are most pushed to the margins in our society. The one night count for 2016 said we had 4,505 people without a shelter. That's a 19% increase from 2015. And so we know that's a major issue. And yet at the same time, we haven't made any major moves to build housing. And I think as we watch city council and these discussions about new legislation around homeless sweeps, and we hear people come and speak basically about their fear of houseless people, I think the city, being in a state of emergency, has an obligation to respond to help houseless people be safer and to provide the sort of housing that houseless folks that they want. And that means that when we decide how to spend that money for those 200 officers, houseless folks have to be involved in the conversation in a way that's substantive. Then we'll see the sorts of alleviation of poverty that actually starts preventing crime and starts preventing our need to access law enforcement.
That's Nikita Oliver, a Seattle attorney and anti-racism activist, telling you her vision of a different model of justice, a community-based restorative justice instead of a punitive government police force. And she says that's not going to happen right away. She's looking forward. So what's your vision? What is one way the Puget Sound area could be a better place to live if we would just lift up our heads and think big? Because we would like to hear from you. You can email us at record@kuow.org. record@kuow.org, on the phone, 206-221-3663, 221-3663. Or on Twitter, if you can summarize your big idea in a Twitter-sized package, we are @KUOW.